Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, November 5th, and it is 1:30 p.m. This is Talk on the Rock, and I'm your host, Colette Zarnicki. We have with us today Emily Klosterman, who is a professional diver. We're going to learn about her passion with diving and a little bit on the U.S. Forest Service Commercial Dive Team and the hopes for that project. You can call in to ask a question. The number to KSTK is 874-2345. Hi, Emily. How are you today?
Hey, Colette. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Excited to be here.
I'm very excited you're here, too. And I imagine other people are, too. So tell us, how did you get involved with diving?
This is a bit of a long-winded answer. I got involved diving here, actually. I got certified here in Wrangell. I was 12 years old back when they did the certifications with the Wrangell Fire Department. And my mom was on the fire department at the time getting certified, and she gifted me the certification at the same time. So we got to do that together 22 years ago, if you can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the person that certified me, he's still doing it in Ketchikan, Wind and Water Charters, Alan Alloway. Big shout out to him, because he literally shaped my life and my career. So I'm pretty thankful for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that was definitely not the only training you've done. Do you need to take, you know, consistent trainings throughout, you know, your diving life?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. For the professional level, I started there as like the basic open water diver. And then with some travels that I was able to do, I was able to get like an advanced certifications, and then through my university, bigger certifications as a scientific diver. And then when I worked for a global private nonprofit, able to get more certifications through the organization and as an assistant instructor. And then now as a, like, working federally, another certification. So I'm just like learning and growing as I go, as I've been moving all around the world and, growing in my diving career. So just having perpetually wet hair all the time, it's kept me pretty busy and pretty stoked to continue further in this career.
Yeah. So I am guessing you do not know how many certifications in diving there are, unless you do. Do you have an idea?
I don't know.
Yeah. And they all, I think, like, from what, you know, from what I gathered, it usually just depends on what the diver wants to learn, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So for myself in particular, the work that I was doing when I lived in the Caribbean, I only needed to get like a certain level of certification to dive safely for that area. So like no deeper than like 60 to like 100 feet. That's like our maximum. Whereas some of my other colleagues, they did surveys for like groupers in like the Bahamian area that are, you know, like going like extinct basically. And they need to do dives at 250 feet. So they have different certifications that they have to master in order to go to those depths safely and be proficient at them. So I essentially, wherever I go, I will just kind of level up when that job needs me to do. So I've been very privileged in order to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that definitely makes sense for sure. So tell us a little bit about your experience as a diver. I know you said 22 years of experience, so there's a lot. Can you just tell us a little bit about your experience?
Yes, yes. Well, I started diving in Alaska, so that's kind of like learning how to drive stick before an automatic. So I'll just touch on that. So in Alaska, as you can imagine, it's very, very cold, and we need to wear a dry suit. So it's a whole nother level of equipment that you have to learn and master in order to do that safely. So I started out diving here, and then lived in the tropics for many years. So I got really spoiled with that. And because you can wear, you know, very little and be super comfortable. So that was really nice. So I dove in the British Virgin Islands and the U.S. Virgin Islands for several years doing coral reef restoration with the Nature Conservancy, which was a very rewarding job.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. So I was very lucky to do that. And so I worked as a scientific diver for there. So I had a little bit of a hiatus during like my time in the Coast Guard, but after that I started diving pretty seriously professionally as a scientific diver for underwater data and research. And now here with the Forest Service, not so much research, but more of like underwater kind of construction and maintenance and things like that. So as you can imagine, you know, like replacing zincs and checking chains and floats and buoys and things like that, of anything that someone could use recreationally.
Yeah. So basically you're doing maintenance underwater.
Yes. Yes. So it for those that haven't worked with no gravity before, you don't really realize how hard it is. So during my time in the Caribbean doing coral reef restoration, there's so many tools that you need to bring down in order to like plant this coral on the reef. And it's a big learning curve of doing that safely when you're carrying big, heavy equipment and things that float to the surface. So that was great training doing that. So I feel very proficient and equipped to do this kind of work now in Alaska in a dry suit, also in the same environment of kind of doing like underwater construction and heavy lifting and stuff like that.
Definitely different, and obviously different climate and environments
too. Oh yeah, yeah.
So my question for your scientific diving,
mm-hmm.
you said you did a coral reef restoration. So were you all growing coral reef and then putting it
yes.
in the sea?
Yes. So growing it in a lab and then also at some specific like sites out in the wild as well. As I'm sure many people know, like coral is being devastated right now throughout the world. So we were kind of mitigating those factors that we couldn't out in the wild. So we basically give them the best chance that they can to survive. And we're essentially like coral gardeners in a way, but also conducting a lot of research and surveys in order to develop their growth, diversity, and survivorship for years to come.
Wow. And how long does it take to grow the coral?
It's about a quarter inch a year. So it's kind of a slow burn, but it's also very tangible because you can see your results in real time. So I was able to plant, you know, corals in 2020. And then in 2023, I can see all of their growth and changing and how the reefs were changing in real time. And that is such a rewarding thing to be a part of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's really fascinating. Okay. So... What is it like for you when you're diving?
This is hard to answer. I think for me, it just shuts my brain off, and I'm able to just focus so heavily on just one thing, like one task. I almost operate better underwater than I do on land, which is one of the reasons why I love it so much. It's good for like me and like my mental health. I'm able to just kind of hone in on a job in like a flow state and just really enjoy myself and be present. And also at the same time, when I'm seeing really cool things and a lot of biodiversity or like a cool like sponge or crab or fish, I'm also like freaking out. So I'm just like living my absolute best life and like all my little childhood dreams.
Oh my
God. All at the same time. And it's really hard to describe to people. So I like to, you know, post the things that I share, you know, from time to time. And I really like sharing that with people because I feel so lucky and privileged to be able to see everything that I've been able to see. It's just something you have to be there.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I recently went through the low tide for the very first time in my life.
Yay, good for you.
And I can only imagine, like, I mean, there was a lot of amazing sea creatures in the low tide, but, like, you know, being underwater where you are, you know, a lot, and seeing all that in action. Mm-hmm.
It's just nothing like it. It's just so special, and I just want to share it with everyone. Yeah, again, hard to describe. Especially being in Wrangell, where we're so lucky to have so much biodiversity on land, but being so close to a freshwater source, it changes the intertidal and marine biodiversity that we have, because not many things can live in that much fresh water. So going to different areas throughout Alaska and just all over the world and seeing how different they are from the tide pools that we have here is just, it's monumental.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I imagine that, you know, each area you have been to, like, it feels different, right? Like when you're diving.
Yes.
Can you just elaborate a little more on that? Like, give comparisons.
Absolutely. So Wrangell, for example, like I said, lots of fresh water because we have the amazing Stikine just north of us. So when we go, like, say Baranof, like when I was diving in Sitka, there's so much more life there because things, like, more things can live in higher salinity. So, like, that area, it's commonly called, like, the Galapagos of the Southeast. So I've saw things there that I've never seen in my life in Southeast Alaska, and we're not that far. It's amazing how I can only go, you know, like 100 miles, and my world has changed underwater. I'm like, I've never seen, like, these species just don't exist here.
What did you see?
Specifically, things that I was, like, really jazzed about was there's abalone everywhere.
Oh, wow.
And we do have some near us, you know, like near Edelin and Clarence Straits, where it's really salty and stuff like that. But the kelp forests were just incredible. And urchins, you know, the size of dinner plates. Yeah, if you're ever diving with me, it's just constant squealing underwater. It's not quiet because there's just, once there's something really cool, you're going to hear about it.
Oh, my God. Okay, so have you ever dived near a whale? Have you? Yeah.
I've heard them underwater. Wow. They've been near me, but I'm not close enough to see, but that's high on my bucket list. I've actually, like, traveled to places to dive with them, and they just, like, weren't in the area at the time. But that's definitely high on my bucket list for sure, to dive with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sharks?
Yes, lots of sharks. When I think of travel, I try to base it around maybe, like, migrations or to see something very specific. So I went to the Bahamas for the Great Hammerhead Migration, and that was, again, like, it was a life-changing experience seeing, like, the biggest animals I've ever seen underwater and being, you know, as close to me, as this close as, like, you and I are away from each other from them.
Do you ever feel fear? You know, like, during those experiences, you know?
Great question. I've never felt fear underwater, but I have a great respect for my surroundings. So I feel like I have strong situational awareness, if that makes sense. And I feel really comfortable and, like, sound in, like, how my body's feeling underwater, how my gear feels, like, I know my equipment, like, the back of my hand. So if all those things feel good, then I feel good. And then I'm just embracing my surroundings and any cool thing that swims up to me.
Yeah.
And know how to operate, like, around specific species, because they all have personalities. Just like here with, like, brown bears and black bears. Same thing. Sharks are the same way.
Wow. Have you had to do training, like, with diving around sharks, or, like, you know, what's involved with that?
Not necessarily training, but learning about, like, each specific species behaves differently. So, like, tiger sharks, they're called the garbage cans of the ocean, because they'll eat anything. And that's very true. They'll, like anything that comes their way, they'll just eat it. Whereas like hammerheads, they behave differently. Or like lemons or like nurse sharks are very docile and stuff like that. So depending on what is around me, my mood will change and my perception will change. So I'm just like, okay, well, this is over here. So I'm not going to turn my back to you kind of thing, because this is in the area. So my eyes are locked in to whatever's looking at me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. So will you talk about a couple memorable moments you've had while diving and then describe what it looks like too?
Sure. Yeah. I think the one recently, I'll just keep talking about sharks if that's okay. It was my first time ever seeing a great hammerhead and a tiger shark and a bull shark all together all at once. And it was a 2-hour dive where we just sit on the bottom of this gorgeous, like perfectly white sand in a small island in the Bahamas. And they kind of like lure these sharks in and they just kind of circle you, and slowly more start to show up and more start to show up and more species. And I've never seen anything that large and powerful, you know, 2 to 3 feet in front of me, like in my life. And I've been around a lot of like apex predators before, but this was different. And I felt no fear. I was just so amazed to be in their presence and to coexist with them. So that was really monumental, that just like that experience to be with this giant animal and feeling no fear that many people have been taught over the years to fear. And I'm like, I feel nothing of this. I'm like, I could live down here. And then another thing I think is just how rewarding my work has been with the like community within small islands in the Caribbean, of just bringing people in to learn about coral and the climate and how to respond to maintain its resilience, and just being a part of something bigger than myself and like working for like a better purpose has been just incredible. I just feel so privileged to be a part of something like that, and to see change in real time was something so tangible and beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My other question is, okay, I imagine it's different for, you know, all areas, but the color underneath, you know, like, is it, you know, can you see color? You know, I know you probably can until you reach a certain point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So great question. So we lose within like probably the 30 feet or so, the color red, you really start to lose, because that's the first in the color spectrum, right? As you get deeper and deeper. So like things get kind of drab the deeper you get, especially in your photos. So if you can, if I have like really big flashlights that I use when I'm diving deeper, and that really illuminates what it looks like in real life. But you would be dramatically surprised of how beautiful it is underwater in Alaska. Most people think like, oh, there's only like these gorgeous rainbow colors when you dive in the tropics. Not at all. Like Alaska has just as many, and same with the fish and invertebrates and organisms. You would not believe how many beautiful colors are just within Southeast Alaska.
That's amazing.
Yes. Yeah. It's very surprising, I think, to most people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What challenges have you come across while diving over your 22 years?
Great question. I think personally, just maintaining like myself and like my health to be able to dive as much as I want to dive. So that's it. That is a big problem within the diving community. I have a lot of colleagues that their like anatomy just like won't allow them to dive as much, with it that being like an inner ear problem or something. So for my struggles personally is just like diving too much and be like getting sick from it, and then having doctors saying like, you need a new career, and I'm like, no, I'm gonna do whatever it takes in order to you know, to try and like overcome this so I continue diving. So it is super hard on your body, and just taking breaks from it has been really difficult for me because it's such a big part of my life.
Yeah.
And my identity as well.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, what do you mean? I have to take a break.
How often do you dive now?
Recently, since I started on with the Forest Service, so diving professionally with them, I've probably only been about 12 times this year, and then recreationally, just like for fun on my own time, probably just several times. It can be kind of difficult finding dive buddies and people that own and operate their own equipment here in Southeast. It's a really expensive endeavor. Mm-hmm. Like it's a commitment for sure. Like, you know, if your photographer friends can tell you, like, I'm saving up for this new lens, same thing for me. I'm like, I'm saving up for this new regulator or suit or something. And it's a lot of money just to do for fun. So my goal is try to get paid to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you mentioned diving buddies. Do you ever dive alone, or is that a no?
No, it's a hard no.
Okay.
So yeah, if you're listening, don't ever dive alone. It's just never worth it. It's not safe. If you're super proficient, it's just not worth it. You never know what can go wrong underwater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And with all your certifications, like, what's the farthest that you have dived down, you know, farthest distance?
Sure. Within just like my a normal like operating range for diving like regular air, probably no more than like 110 feet. Mm. There are like some really cool things down deep, but you can't stay down there for very long. So I prefer diving really shallow because I want to stay down as long as humanly possible and see as much as I can. I don't want to go down to 100 plus feet and only have 7 minutes to stay down there.
Yeah.
Safely, you know, before you would go into like a decompression.
Right.
So I prefer that kind of diving just because I like enjoy myself as long as I can underwater.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. What is the farthest distance somebody can dive? Do you know?
It's really far. Farther than I think there's some record. When I lived in St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Islands, there was a record diver that went, I don't know how many hundreds, almost thousands. But
oh, wow.
So it was a whole, yeah, we don't have to get too far into this because it didn't end well for this poor guy, unfortunately. But like I can descend and dive deeply, right, to a certain point. But then as I ascend, if I come to the surface, I have to make all these safety stops, right? So you can get down really quickly, but to get back up safely, it takes a long time. So the nitrogen in your bloodstream can have slow like time to release. And that can take hours.
Oh my goodness.
And hours. Yeah. So it's a commitment. If I go down really deep, I'm like, well, what's your plan, you know, as we're slowly ascending safely?
Wow.
So I don't know the record. And honestly, I'd be scared to know when I read about those things. Because that's not me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know where you want to be.
I know where I want to be. And that's shallow. And that's for a long time.
So, okay. You mentioned the U.S. Forest Service commercial dive team,
yes.
And you trained last month for it, I believe?
We did. So how this, or like why this came about, is because the Forest Service has wreck cabins, right, all over through Southeast Alaska. Some of those have buoys that you can moor up to, floats, docks. I think Wrangell District has 6 or 7, so like Annan Float, Berg Bay, Steamer Bay, anything that you can moor your boat up to, we are essentially in charge of that. So we created a team in order to service those buoys ourselves, so we don't have to contract and pay thousands of dollars to someone else to do that. So we created a team within the Tongass. So I have 2 dive members in Sitka and then 2 here in Wrangell, including myself. And we conducted some rigorous training in Sitka that consisted over 12 dives, but amazing dives, like I said, because there's so many cool things to see. So it was very enjoyable, but also very cold, very uncomfortable. So basically my team is very comfortable with being uncomfortable, doing a little underwater construction, and also taking like surveys and information on these chains that are connected to the buoy as well, to make sure that they're looking good and not degrading, so they're safe for people to moor up to for years and years.
Yeah. So the commercial part in U.S. commercial dive team, is that basically the maintenance part then, just trying to?
Yes. Okay. Great question, because when we hear the word commercial, we think of like commercial diving, you know, for like sea cucumber for the fishery, and that's same but different.
Yeah. You still get to see all the really amazing life underneath.
Yes. There's amazing life, so much that live along the chains too, which is really fun to see. The invertebrates of and the colors of them are, it's incredible.
Wow. Yeah. Really cool. Mm-hmm. So do you have an idea of what the diving community looks like in, you know, Wrangell and Southeast Alaska?
Yes. So I can speak to, I think, Wrangell, Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan specifically. Wrangell has, there's a few of us, but it's kind of hard because, you know, we have like a friend that has an air compressor that can fill tanks, right? And like not many people have all their own equipment, or we can swap and borrow and things. So there's, we don't have as many resources here in Wrangell, which is what I've like want to change and help facilitate over time, hopefully with the commercial dive team, like years from now. Ketchikan has a great diving community because they have the actual like dive shop there, Wind and Water. Juneau has a large diving community because they have a lot of divers within the university and they conduct research. And Sitka has a giant diving community, not just with the university there at UAS Sitka, but also within their fire department and the Forest Service there as well. And a lot of recreational divers, because you could just walk right in right from shore. You don't need a boat. You don't need anything. Yeah, it's really easy. And they also do snorkel tours and stuff like that there, too. So lots of stuff to see year round there in Sitka. So it's pretty prevalent.
Yeah, really cool. Okay, So you mentioned university. Let's talk about education. Like, how do people get involved?
I'm so glad you asked. So when I went to UAS in Juneau, I was able to take a scientific diving course. So it's an elective and it's one semester long. And that is through the American Academy of Underwater Sciences. So AAUS is the certification that you get at the end. And again, it's very rigorous training. It's probably the hardest diving I've ever done. Because it's a lot over a semester, but by the time that you are done with it, you're feeling good, you're proficient, and you can dive, I would say, anywhere. Yeah. So that helped me further my career dramatically. So I was able to take that certification that I got in school and dive with a global private nonprofit. So that's the Nature Conservancy. You could dive with the National Park Service. It's kind of like a captain's license in a way. It allows you to dive with a university or any like big research-based organization, essentially. So, and it's hard to get anywhere else. Not many universities even offer this. So if you are a college student or a high school student and want to learn more about this, please reach out to me, because I can speak to my experience, and I have a lot of like great colleagues and professors that are still in this profession, and it shaped me, my life, and my career, and I know it will continue to. So I'm just so thankful for that opportunity.
Yeah. And yeah. How can people reach out to you? How can they get a hold of you?
Yeah. So my email is my last name, Klosterman, Klosterman, Emily, @gmail.com. Email me any diving related question. I'll try not to talk your ear off about it, but I'd love to point people in the right direction, because it started here for me 22 years ago, and I'm still doing it and I'm loving it. And so I want to help anyone that's looking to do something similar.
Amazing. Is there anything else you'd like to add about diving?
If you're thinking about it or hesitant, just do it. Just send it. You'll love it. I promise.
Great. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Emily, for coming in and talking about your passion. That was Emily Klosterman talking about her experience as a diver. We are now going to jump into World Cafe.